The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 113.
Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show that I have a tremendous amount of respect for. I am so excited for this interview. He really needs no introduction whatsoever. His name is Dr. Ron Paul. Dr. Paul, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Nice to be with you today.
Okay, now I just did a whiteboard video on the Fed and auditing the Fed. And I know you've done a lot of work on this. So can you explain the work that you've done and kind of the partial audit you got of the Fed and the results of that audit?
Yes, because it is, for me and what I've done in politics has had a big impact. Because I got fascinated with Austrian economics and the monetary system actually back in the 60s, and there were predictions, and people did follow the Austrian school, and there were predictions made that, you know, the Bretton Woods would break down. So I paid a lot of attention, and then on August 15th, 1971, there was a big, big announcement by Nixon that Bretton Woods fell down, and there was no more gold standard, and there would the dollar could not be convertible, even by foreigners, into gold. And that meant the $35 an ounce gold was no longer there. But because of the chaos that it caused with the wage and price control, we had a terrible decade, it motivated me to speak out. It didn't motivate me to want to be a congressman or anything like that. It was more like that nobody's talking about this. Like, this is important. Monetary policy is really an important subject. It's key to a healthy economy. So I did that, and then there was nobody wanting to run for office as a Republican in 1974. So I put my name down, and I was surprised because a year later then in 75, I was elected to Congress. But the main issue was the gold and the right. monetary system. But I, immediately got into that and decided that the way to get attention is to show that nobody knows what's going on. We have to audit the Federal Reserve. And that's what I worked on for many years. Later on, as I was in and out of Congress, but in the 80s, we started this group with Campaign for Liberty, because that was their key issue that they promoted. And we were able to galvanize enough grassroots support for the issue of money, and that we would gather around this whole project of telling people why they should audit the Fed. And we were able to get it passed in the House of Representatives a couple times. So that to me was astounding, because it wasn't because I had any political clout or legislative clout. It was because the grassroots woke up and told their members of Congress, yes, you should support Ron Paul and get an audit of the Federal Reserve, which we continue to do. The Campaign for Liberty still exists, and that is one of their main functions, is trying to call attention. People say, well, why shouldn't it be just get rid of the Fed? Of course, we want to get rid of the Fed, but the audit is the link. You can get a lot more people to sign up and call attention to them. And my thoughts are, if you get a true audit of the Fed and know what they're doing, people will say, why do they exist? We need to get rid of them.
Right, exactly. Now, was there a partial audit done back in 2011 or so, or is this just something we're
still... Yeah, there was, but it's sort of the part of the Fed that is generally public knowledge, you know, the management, but not on how the money's spent. The most protected things they have is the foreign exchanges, the way they deal with foreign governments and foreign banks, which was like $15 trillion worth in 08 and 09 during the recession at that time. And you don't know who gets the money and where it goes, but what they were doing, they were talking about management money, you know, salaries and different things like that, but it had nothing to do with policy. I was, you know, on the monetary policy subcommittee, on the banking committee, but I would have never been allowed to go to, you know, a Federal Reserve meeting, an open market meeting like they're having today. No, they're not going to. It's a secret organization. It was established, of course, by the Congress, but it's very, very secret. It's one of the strongest, if not the strongest arm of the deep state, because if you can control a currency which is considered the reserve currency of the world, very, very powerful. You can do a lot of dumb things and you can print a lot of money, but eventually it comes unglued. And I think that's what's happening around the world today and why the dollar is currently going down and gold is going up.
Those are great points. As far as the Federal Reserve, who do you think has more control over the Fed? Is it really a private institution or a group of individuals, or do you think it's more influenced by the government?
You know, that's interesting because I think there's sometimes a misconception on it because they'll say, well, just, you know, you can't look at it because it's a private institution. And I substitute another word from it. It's a secret institution by private people. Because it's not private like you think of a private institution or a private business, because the Federal Reserve Act was an act of Congress, and the appointments still go through the Senate, and so it is very much public. The Congress, technically speaking, can't end the Fed because they legislated it, but it's not going to happen because this deep state, which has all the influence behind the scenes, they dictate policy, and they were probably, you know, instigators in having the Federal Reserve brought into being in 1913. So it's controlled by individuals who are very secretive. They have meetings and they will announce things, but it's all, a cover up. But most of the time you can figure out what they're doing. Right now, they're struggling to keep the economy together by propping up the stock market. And that's where most of their attention is going right now, because they have a job on their hands.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So let's go into what are the unintended consequences. Can you explain that a little bit further, then maybe expand into why the Federal Reserve allows the countries and central banks in general allow countries to create more war, more welfare, a lot of things that are just detrimental to society?
Well, the number one reason is we still don't have any education going on in our public schools or in our colleges as to how the Federal Reserve works and how dangerous it is and how much of a threat it is to our liberties. But it's ironic that we still defend this system, and I think libertarians and conservatives aren't very good at distinguishing what we have compared to what the socialists and Marxists want, because they can come up and say, look at what you guys are doing. You have free enterprise and capitalism, and look at what you have. Well, we don't have that, and we don't argue the case that we're putting up with interventionism, inflationism, and something that's very strange to what a free market would be all about. And therefore, there's a lot of downside. So in some ways, we would agree with the Marxists saying this is a terrible system. The rich are getting richer, and the poor are getting poorer. And there's definitely some truth about that. But if you're getting richer in a free society and you haven't gotten any benefits from the Federal Reserve and you didn't have a Federal Reserve, you shouldn't condemn wealth and energy and success. But right now they lump it all together because so you can hardly get super wealthy without the benefits of the Federal Reserve. What happens is with the Federal Reserve is always creating credit. And they just think in the last 3 or 4 months, they said, well, we'll try to bail out the little guy too, but the little guys are going under. They're not even expected to come back. But the big corporations are getting bigger and bigger. And so the money is created. The Federal Reserve distributes it through the banking system. It's made available to big business and banks under ordinary circumstances, not during the bust. So they get it. And the money circulates, and there will be some stimulus, but there will be a lot, it'll facilitate debt, deficit financing, and then it keeps going that way. But by the time the average person on the street gets the money in his hands, the value of the money went down, the value of the dollar goes down, the prices go up. So the people suffer. The people who get the money first before it loses its value are very significant, and that's why they do benefit. But of course, they're the best lobbyists in the world. You take one of the strongest lobbying group in Washington is the military-industrial complex. So they're able to lobby, and this would sort of answer the question you brought up, is why do we put up with this? Well, people are made fearful. They scare people. Just think of what's going on and the loss of liberties that has recently occurred with the coronavirus. Fear, build fear. And so we have to build up fear. I worked real hard trying to prevent the war in Iraq, but it was fear. Saddam Hussein was Hitler, and he was going to bomb us, you know. So the people get very frightened, even though later on, most people said it was the dumbest war we've ever been in. And that takes some doing. So it's a lot of activity for the special interest. And I don't think you can just get a Federal Reserve system and say, well, do it fairly. No, it's a system that shouldn't exist. And because what we're talking about in a free market is capital doesn't come from the Federal Reserve by printing money and creating it in a computer and stimulating deficit spending by the Congress. And what they want to do is eliminate this whole idea of what capitalism is. I sort of don't like the word capitalism, but free markets and building of capital. Capital should come from what we have left over after we work and produce and take care of ourselves. And if we have a leftover, we save it or invest it. And that's capital. It has to be created in the marketplace. Capital isn't created by the Federal Reserve running a printing press. That dilutes capital. So if they double and triple the money supply without any increased production, all that does is dilute the money supply. If prices go up and distorts the markets, not only do you have the distribution of the money in a bad way, you have malinvestment too. They make mistakes and constantly, you know, whether it's the subsidies that we give everybody or the wars we fight. And so it encourages a lot of mistakes. If there's a market rate of interest, the most important price that people should think about is the rate of interest, the market rate of interest, which doesn't exist anymore, because what is it now? Real interest rates are probably below zero. And that's no way to send a signal to the investors, the savers, and the producers, and making decisions about the marketplace. No, the decisions are all made about, can I grab a buck now? Can I get it from the Fed? Can I get my lobbyists to support my position? And then we will make money by participating in the wars that are created, whether they're domestic wars or foreign wars.
Yeah, boy, there's such great points right there. I think if we could just rebrand capitalism to free markets, because the socialists and the Marxists, they talk about capitalism. Capitalism is a bad thing. But if you just ask the ordinary person on the street, hey, should we have free markets? That's kind of like a no-brainer. Oh, yeah, well that sounds good. Yeah. And then going back to, I'd love to get your take, because you were right in the thick of things in 2008 and 2009 with these bailouts. And nowadays, you know, the younger generation and the kids marching and rioting and looting, doing all these things, they look at that as, well, look at what happened with capitalism. All these big banks got bailed out, but they just don't understand. That was the opposite of capitalism. So I'd love your take on 2008, 2009. And then today, how we're seeing that movie all over again with these bailouts of the airlines and every other big corporation, while the mom and pop shop on the street is going out of business.
Well, I think you've asked the key question and the important point, because if we don't address that and change it, we lose it right away, because they grab the moral high ground. They come in and they're the only ones who care about poor people. And they create more poor people. How many people died at the hands of the authoritarians, you know, the Marxists and fascists and all that are happening in the 20th century? Millions of people died at their hands, and they're getting away with, they're grabbing the moral high ground. We're the only ones who care about the poor people. We're going to feed the poor people, and we're going to bring about peace in the world, all this thing. And they're exactly the opposite. But I think too many conservatives and Republican people roll over, and they don't say, I agree with you. This is a mess. We predicted it wouldn't work, and it's creating these problems. And it was, you know, and the bailouts especially are bad, because that's when you can't figure out anything of what they're doing, because more secretive. But right now, this looks like it's going to be much worse than the bailouts, you know, in 08 and 09. But I think the reason why this is getting much more dangerous is even they who have bailed individuals out and they have managed to get us out of recessions, you know, over the last 70 years, 80 years now, I think it's going to fail. I don't think we're going to see. And they've already warned us, we'll never go back to normal again. And they're talking about civil liberties. We'll never go back to enjoying civil liberties again. They're always going to be quarantining us for some reason. So that that is the great danger. But it also puts them under the gun too, because once runaway inflation occurs and runaway government occurs, there will be always somebody who's going to stand up and say, enough is enough. and they're not going to be instructed on the proper philosophy from our universities. So it won't come from the universities, but it will come from somewhere. So the important thing that I apply to myself is do the best job I can in trying to introduce these views to as many people as possible and try to get people to try to change the minds of other people. And I would say that I ended up doing things I never dreamed that would happen. I never dreamed, I wasn't even going to Congress, let alone get to the point where we had literally millions of people listening, and they know about the Federal Reserve, and you talk about it all the time. I think it's great.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
Why is it a good thing? Why is it positive in the long run to allow these big corporations to fail?
Oh, well, that's important because what you do if you prop up a bad corporation, you take the money away from the good corporation. You know, you tax them. So it's just the opposite of free market. In a free market, you might have some corrections when people get excited and then they malinvest. But the most important thing you do is you back off, and it's called a correction. So you don't want to interfere with the correction. They come along and try to correct the errors that individuals make, but it's hard to come along and correct the errors that the government makes. How do you correct it unless you change the philosophy? And that is what happens. You know, the mistakes that are made out there, and you can't change them and go back and say, do it a different way. But I think, yes, spending is bad. Deficits are bad. Interest rates are very important. But the malinvestment is very important because to get this thing going again, you have to have the correction, liquidation of debt and liquidation of malinvestment. No politician can, support that, have any authority. You wouldn't be president if you supported them, because everybody wants the bailout, and I predict they're going to want and demand the bailouts until the whole thing comes down. And, the correction is a different understanding of monetary policy and a strong desire of the people to want to live free and take care of themselves, responsibility. And right now we teach and preach that people should be dependent on the government. And if you're not dependent on the government, you're unpatriotic.
Yeah. So on that note, we talked about bailouts, and that's more kind of like the mainstream narrative. But I think that narrative will transition from bailouts for corporations to bailouts for Main Street. So let's talk about universal basic income. I think we're kind of seeing the start of it with these additional unemployments and stimulus checks. Do you think that's something that we're going to see long term? It's going to be more permanent?
Yeah, the attempt will be, and they've started to do that. We're sort of already fully testing the modern monetary theory. But the one thing is it won't work because the prices are going to go up faster than the money they send them. They're sending them money, and you might as well send them just pieces of paper. So eventually it quits working, and that's why printing all that money in Venezuela and Zimbabwe, they end up with just very, very high prices. And then what it does, it do, it encourages an underground economy. People will start bartering. They still will find some coins to use and this sort of thing. But no, they will do that. And I think politically, they are astute to that, and they know that they have to appeal to the working class more so than they did in 07, 08, because the statistics were so bad that they got wiped out. But they're already bad now for the average person and a small businessman, and they're not going to be able to just send more checks there and rebuild these cities, because the cities are being torn up by people who are abusing their responsibilities and using taxpayers' money. And all they're saying now is, we don't believe in having police, but send more money to us and take care of us. They still want the money, and they still want their food stamps. But it'll quit working. And so they will politically appease to them, certainly in the next several months. They'll try to point out, both parties will try to point out, yes, that if, you know, we really do care. And I am convinced, absolutely convinced, that if you are concerned and you have interest, and most people do have a humanitarian concern, and that is, if you care about poor people and people don't have enough food, you have to look at the statistics that show the freer a society is, the freer the market, the sounder the money is, the better it is for the middle class, and the better it is for eliminating the very poor. So that is, that gives the most wealth ever known to mankind. We had a taste of it, but then we've drifted away from it for 100 years.
Yeah, Dr. Paul, I'd love for you to go into a little greater detail on a video I just watched of yours from the other day about the Fed coin that was introduced recently. And this is kind of a transfer mechanism for UBI that will be adopted quite enthusiastically by the general populace, because they'll get this free money on their phone or their app or whatever. But then in your video, you really dove into how this is extremely Orwellian, 1984, and how it will allow the Fed and or the government to control spending, especially with the mainstream narrative now, with all these businesses having to be woke or having to be, have some sort of socialist or social justice agenda, that they could transfer the spending to where you could only spend your Fed coins at these businesses that had taken a knee and pledge some sort of, who knows what they'll have to pledge in the future, but we could see this kind of coming down the pipeline. So could you explain how that Fed coin really gets us from where we are now to this kind of Orwellian 1984 type scenario?
Yeah, and I know they have their goals, and I hope I understand that pretty well, but they also have some hurdles to overcome, because governments are inept and their planning doesn't always work out quite right. But everybody's going to have an account, and they'll send it to the account. I'm pretty amazed that, just in these last few months, how many checks they sent out to everybody. Yeah, everybody got a check, the $600 or $1,200 that they got. And they did that, and just almost like overnight, they were able to do that. Oh, they did make a few mistakes, a million or 2 million people who are already dead and end up getting checks. So they're in app, so it's not going to work. And they won't have control. It will be very conducive for inflation. But the social controls, I think, is what you're addressing. Yes,
yeah.
If it's moved cautiously and softly, and government is like more successful, it will lead to just more intrusion into your liberties, because they'll know more about it. And this looks like, from the surface, it would be only the money that they send, but eventually they'll use that same technique of saying, well, Fed coin's working pretty well, everybody's on Fed coin, and even the people who aren't get straight from the government, you'll have to go in and have your account. Now, I got to thinking, well, you're gonna have your account. Your name's gonna be on it, and you get to spend it as you need it. And I keep thinking, that's what they told Americans in 1935. We're gonna have this account for you, and we're gonna take care of it. Of course, it didn't do a thing. So, I think it's more, it's economics, it's political, but it's also this social control, which I mentioned in the article.
Yeah, for sure. And just to be clear there, when you're saying everyone has an account with them, you're talking about every individual has a checking account with the Fed, like the primary dealer banks and everything. That's where it really gets kind of spooky, if you've taken the deep dive into what the Fed actually represents. But take us back to 2001 and 9/11, then we had the Patriot Act. and it comes in under the form of a crisis. And then what ends up happening is, you know, over the next decade, two decades, our civil liberties as a result of this Patriot Act or this crisis become smaller and smaller and smaller. And I'm just very concerned that what's happening right now with the COVID crisis, it's going to be the exact same thing, that they issue in all these new laws and regulations. So in 2025, 2030, that we're just going to see our personal freedoms shrink that much more.
I'd say you're right. Because that was something that I fought desperately to try to prevent, you know, was like TSA and right. the Patriot Act. And I was sitting beside a friend and who tended to be conservative, but he was voting for the Patriot Act. I said, don't you know this has a lot of bad stuff in it? And he said, yeah, I know that. I said, why are you voting for it? He says, well, because how am I going to go home and talk to my constituent in the midst of this horrendous crisis and say, oh, I voted against the Patriot Act. I said, well, that's your job. That's what right. you're supposed to do. He didn't agree with it, but he voted for it. So, you know, it's that demagoguery that happens. But no, they don't go back. They were the TSA is the thing that's most visible, I think, for a lot of people. But that's going to get a lot worse. You can't even get on airplanes now due to COVID. So the TSA, they never backed off. They kept making it worse. So all the regulations, I don't know what they'll do with the mask, but I think some sort of mask is going to be with us for a long time until people get really, really disgusted. But they might just change it. It might be a different way of controlling us. And they want submission. They want us to submit to authority. I think that's their goal, is to show who's in charge in a free society. And it is the individual. We have individual sovereignty. It's our life. We can't hurt people, but they can't touch us. But that's wrong. Right now, they get you very, very dependent. In order to get the stuff that you're dependent on, you have to submit to the authorities. That's why I think this mask business is so bad. Medically, I disagree with it. I think it's total nonsense and doesn't do any good. But I think the biggest evil there is the people who put these on voluntarily and then become aggressive when they see somebody that doesn't have a mask on and they get vicious. Somebody got shot in the face the other day. Why aren't you protecting me? Why don't you have a mask on? It drives people right out of their minds. So you have to submit to authority. And there's been too much of that for too long, but that's what authoritarianism is all about. It's getting everybody to submit to the authorities. And that, of course, is the extreme of a Nazi type of economy or a communist economy, is you have to submit. But we're in that, we're moving in that direction. We're talking about the cash. I think they're going to work very hard to eliminate the use of cash. And right. And that, of course, once more would be to further control us. I think they're going to have a problem. A lot of people don't use cash. You know, I mean, don't. They don't use paper money or bank accounts or anything. They use cash alone. And then when it becomes very, very extreme and it doesn't function, the people who knew it was coming, they might have silver coins around and they survive. But the only thing that solves these problems is the emphasis on individual personal liberty, because you can't tinker on here and change one policy here and there. You have to introduce the notion of what liberty is about, where the responsibility is, where our liberties come from. But it has to be recognized that you can do what you want with your life, but if you don't do well, you can't go to the government and get them to get some help from your neighbor. You're not allowed to do it on your own. You can't go to your neighbor and steal. Why is it accepted that we can send the government? Call your congressman. I want this stuff. You know, the whole notion is, a fallacy based on a fallacy. And I think it's so important that people assume responsibility. And that's the key to it. If you can't do that, I've had a lot of friends over decades. Well, I got to get out of this place. It's getting worse and worse. And they'll go overseas and live someplace else. And there's imperfections overseas, too. But I've decided I've never had any interest in that. But the main thing to do is not to just get your taxes lowered get rid of the taxes and get rid of the intervention, get rid of the wars, get rid of the crony capitalism. That's the only thing that we do, and it has to be a moral argument, and we have to have our ducks lined up that we understand history, and we should not drift into this and say that be on the defensive and say, oh no, what we're doing, we're defending the Constitution, when you know 99% of the stuff they do in Washington at the agreement of both parties is technically unconstitutional. But that's why I look at all this problem as I like the study of economics, and I was drawn into politics that way, but I still think just basic education and understanding what liberty is all about is the most important thing that we can do to help ourselves and our families and help our country.
How can we as individuals educate others? What would be your suggestion? Should we use the internet? Should we use YouTube and try to just share as many of the thought leaders like yourself that we can with our friends and family? What can we do to help?
Yes, everything. People ask me that all the time. What should I do? I agree with you, Ron. You need to do this. And I said, do whatever you can or whatever you want to, because what you're doing, you're reaching out to people and you have an opinion, so you're spreading a message. Other people, you know, even if they say, well, I'm a teacher, should I get rid of my job? No, just do what you can wherever you are. Everybody has a different role. Technology is important. The internet is important in spite of all the controls. I would think that eventually we're going to get smarter. I'm not much into the technology, but I would think that there's going to be enough people from the libertarian side that they can actually, you know, use it and counteract the abuse from the social media networks where they regulate everything you say, because they're essentially in the business with the government, because everything they get, all the information they get from us, the social media turns over to the government if they want it. But I think we have to counteract it with technicians that know something about that. But the important thing is, what do they believe in? You know, do they believe in personal responsibility and getting away from the government? The government is there to protect our decision-making as long as individuals don't lie, cheat, steal, or kill. You know, there's basic rules. They've been there about 6,000 years almost, maybe not quite that long, 3,000 years. People knew and understood that you shouldn't be killing each other and stealing from each other. So it's not a new debate, and it's gone through it. It's just a shame that we haven't gotten enough people to look at just the history of the 20th century and say, my goodness, look at what those idiots did. Millions of people killed because they endorsed authoritarianism, and they had to wait so long until the thing came apart. And it did come apart, but the picking up of the pieces hasn't been perfect. But of course, we're a lot better off than the freedom issue was before 1990. So I think the collapse of the Soviet system was the greatest event of the political event of this of the 20th century.
Right. Well, hopefully we'll see the errors of the past and move to a better future and something a grassroots approach to all of this. And I think that's great that every single person watching this or listening to this can feel as though they have a role and they have power to influence the narrative moving forward. So, Dr. Paul, I know that you're limited on time. I sincerely appreciate you giving me the honor, really, to interview you. You've had a massive influence on my thinking, and I just want to say thank you. One of my good buddies, Brandon, said, make sure you thank Dr. Paul for me. He's been such a positive impact on my life, so I promised him I would do that. For my viewers and my listeners who want to follow your work and what you're doing on YouTube and online, where should they go?
Well, there's a couple places. I do the daily program, Ron Paul Liberty Report, live stream at 11 Central Time, but also do a lot of work when it comes to the monetary issues, the Campaign for Liberty, which is something I continue to work on. The principal thing we work on there, economic policy, but mainly going after the Fed. So those are the two things I'm working on a lot right now. And like I said, there's a lot of people out there doing these kind of things. I'm always amazed at the spreading of the message. And the one thing is that nobody knows how many people are out there. You know, I look at it sort of like there's a remnant. There's always a remnant of society when it's collapsing. But I think that group who's trying to hang on to the truth of things, that remnant, the opposition to what we have, I think that it's growing. on the short run, I think it's going to be very, very harmful and disastrous. On the long run, I think ideologically we're making good progress. So I don't think that we should be so pessimistic, because there were times in the 20th century, things were pretty bad, and they're pretty bad now. But keep doing what you're doing, George. I think what your program's doing and others can do it, everybody should join in, whatever they can do to spread the message of liberty.
Awesome, Dr. Paul. Thank you. And I cannot wait to do this again.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.